Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 14th, 2010. I'm your host, David McLaughlin from Rome, Georgia, and from Atlanta, Catherine Smith, welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, and from Somerville, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, big show tonight. Got a lot of topics in the first hour, a little bit of Kentucky, a little bit of Georgia, and then in the second half hour, we're going to have Martin Weinberg of Alabama and Mooncat Sherry of Left in Alabama blog, both to come on and tell us about what happened and what the future holds for Alabama politics. So real excited about that in the second half. But first topic in, our friends at Public Policy Polling have already started polling the next cycle, if you will, and the next cycle is the 2011 elections, and those are not very many states, but Kentucky's one of them. And they did a poll on the incumbent governor, Steve Beshear, and it shows that Steve Beshear is in really solid shape. His overall job approval, he's like 14 points to the positive, and the actual numbers against two different opponents, he doesn't break 50%. But he's got nearly a 20-point lead against Phil Moffitt, and then he's got a 9-point lead against David Williams. I'll have to learn more about these folks, and I'm sure there'll be some primary involved there as well. But if the reason I find this intriguing is if you look at some of the states in the 2010 elections that had Tea Party candidates, Delaware, Alaska, Nevada, all of those states, the Tea Party candidates did not win, and they were all states that, you know, they could have easily gone Republican had a different candidate been elected. But in Kentucky, they didn't go with the establishment Republican. They went with the Tea Party candidate, Rand Paul, who continued to say crazy things and have even crazier supporters almost up until Election Day. Yet the Kentucky electorate elected him. But obviously a sliver of these folks are still backing the Democratic governor, giving him a near majority. Tim, what do you make all this?
Well, first of all, you're right about Governor Beshear's approval. He has a 48-34% approval-disapproval ratio. Now, he is pretty popular with independent voters in that state. He's kind of a moderate kind of guy. The opponent said he's running against Moffitt is a businessman, not even in politics, and a lot of people don't even know who the man is. That's why Governor Beshear runs 20 points ahead of him. Now, Williams, on the other hand, is a known commodity, and he is the president of the state Senate. So he's in the news all the time. The problems he's got is that his approval rating is like 16%. So that's just getting him killed with the voters. Of course, this thing's got a long way until it shakes out, and we shouldn't read too much into the fact that Rand Paul just got elected to the Senate and tie it to this race. You might recall about a year ago, Catherine, when David was not with us that night, but we had a couple of guys on from Kentucky, and they told us that night that establishment Republicans were very angry with Mitch McConnell because of his treatment of Senator Bunny, and that they were going to send him a message, and they were going to do it by voting for Rand Paul, and that was true. You know, that's my take on what's going on up there right now, David.
Yes, Catherine, your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm friends on Facebook with the guy who used to be the treasurer or the chief financial officer of the state of Kentucky. I can't remember if he's called the treasurer or whatever. But one of the things that I've noticed that's going on in Kentucky is there's a huge green initiative, sustainable energy stuff going on, and you know, they're really active. They've got all kinds of activities and projects that are, you know, sort of making sustainable energy more affordable and more available. And I suspect that that's the kind of thing that appeals to the independent voters as well as to the Democratic voters. So I can see how it doesn't really surprise me that Bashir is popular, because it sounds to me, just from, you know, the little bit that I see, that they are really trying to be sort of a proactive government, and I think people respond well to that. I think, you know, they see a lot of activity on the, you know, green thing, and then I think that, like you said, he's relatively moderate. He's not, you know, as wacky as some of the other, either Democrats or other politicians, Democrat or Republican or Tea Party or whatever. So it's not really a surprise, and I think it's a reflection of people's, you know, overall satisfaction with good government. And maybe all of us could learn something from the state of Kentucky.
Yes. One thing I will say, Kentucky, is it appears that, you know, for better or for worse, Kentucky voters can distinguish their thoughts and feelings of the National Democratic Party and the State Democratic Party apart from each other. And, of course, I'm one of the folks that I wish you kind of vote Democratic on federal and state level, but I do find it interesting. If you look at the Republican vote or the vote for president, John McCain won by 16% of the voters in this poll. I don't remember what the actual number was, but I know John McCain did win the state. Then if you look at the actual party ID number, 53% of the state are Democrats in this poll, 37% Republican. And then you look where we've been talking a lot about how racial politics in our state of Georgia, but probably Alabama and Mississippi, South Carolina are very similar, where in a lot of cases white means Republican, black means Democrat for a lot of folks. 89% of the electorate in Kentucky is white, African-American 6, other is 5. So basically in Kentucky, if Democrats can't get a decent amount of white vote, I mean, they've got to be the minority party, given those demographics. So Kentucky's kind of an interesting model to look at, I think, moving forward, particularly if these numbers hold. Catherine, Tim, any thoughts on those, looking at the party ID and race numbers? Any closing thoughts on Kentucky?
Kentucky has always been kind of an interesting state, and it's been a state at times over the years that has been pretty friendly to Democrats. Franklin Roosevelt, one of his vice presidents, was from Kentucky, and we've elected a lot of guys to federal office from Kentucky over the years. They do tend to register Democratic and vote that way in a lot of local races in Kentucky. And then they'll turn around a lot of times and vote, you know, president or something in another race. But I feel pretty good about this race, is what I'm saying. I believe Governor Bashir is going to win re-election if things hold as they are now. Don't you, Catherine?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, Kentucky's kind of an interesting state. It's obviously a southern state, but it's, you know, it's right on the border of being a southern and a midwestern state. So it is an interesting state. And you know, I don't know if you've ever visited there, but they have great state parks. They have really – it appears from the outside and from – to be a very well-managed state. So, I think that it is in many ways a model for states of its size and demographics.
Yeah.
Great state park.
Yeah, and
I'll
tell you this.
A lot.
The city of Louisville, I think, is a very nice city. And But then, there's a lot of decent-sized cities in the state. We're going to talk a lot about Kentucky and Mississippi, both in the coming year, because those are the two states that have elections. One will be an open seat in Mississippi, but then Kentucky will be a Democratic defend. So, and I think Virginia may have some legislative elections, but not the statewide races that we talk so much about in 2009. Well, I guess the next part of the show, we're going to move heavily into Georgia. Just a lot of different topics. And one I kind of wanted to talk about is I wanted to get into these party switchers. There were three people this past week that have definitely switched from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. All rural Democrats, white Democrats, and both those things were pointed out. But then also older, I guess, members that have been in the party when the party was in power, but then have also stuck through in the past, I guess now 6 years of being in the minority, so it's not like they just woke up. I mean, you know, they could have switched when the switching was good, if you will, back a while. Catherine, why do you think they switched now?
Well, I mean, those election numbers were really pathetic, and, you know, maybe they I haven't talked to any of them, so I don't know for sure, but, you know, on one hand, I can't really blame them if they're, you know, concerned about, you know, delivering services and, you know, satisfying their constituents. They may have gotten pressure from them, or they just feel like that's the best way they can serve their districts. By, you know, being on the Republican side. Did any of them switch after the leadership elections?
It kind of came simultaneously.
If they voted in the leadership elections and then they switched, I think that's
pretty
bad. They didn't?
Yeah.
Because I know there's been rumors about a couple more who did vote in the leadership elections, and I think that would be pretty crappy.
But they hadn't, so, I don't know that that really they should have switched if they're looking at their long-term political health. They're just going to get primaried. I mean, Walter Minnick's right, I think, that all
maybe
three
they feel
of
like
them
this is their
primary
maybe they're not
be done.
Maybe they're not going to run again.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be more honorable to go out like a Paul Smith, like a Nathan Dean, like a Buddy Childers, where you, in two of those cases, the men retired, and one of the cases, the men lost, but they lost, you know, with the beliefs that they had carried for all those years. Tim, jump in here.
Well, first of all, we can dispense with the honor part of it, because to me, party switching is not an honorable thing. It is a very selfish thing. I do not think that the people who do that have any strong principles. If there had been an election here in Georgia where Democrats just swept the state like that, I'm sure there would have been some Republicans to be jumping and switching, and they're just as bad, too. So let me qualify it right now by saying, however a person switches, party switching is just not a good business to me. The reason they switch right now is because the next big thing that's coming up is reapportionment.
Yeah.
Well, they're switching, so hoping that they won't be gerrymandered, although I think probably maybe at least one of them might get gerrymandered anyway. But that's why they're doing it right now, David. They're not worried about the elections in 2 years. They're worried about what happens to them this coming January. And I think the other thing is, especially with those rural Democrats, is that they look at the agriculture office now, and there's a Republican in it, as well as a Republican in every statewide office. So all the doors are slammed all of a sudden. And they figured if they switch parties, they might gain a little bit of leverage.
They're going to be at the back of the line. I mean,
yeah.
In my mind.
They'd rather be at the back of the line than out of the line altogether, of course. Like I said, party switching is a selfish thing, and the reason the people switch is for political expediency. you know, they can talk about the party leaving them and all of this tommy rot, but the truth of the matter is they want to stay in office, and some people will do whatever they think it takes to do that.
Yeah, let's kind of look at district by district. I would think the two in the south part of the state, Bob Hanner and Gerald Green, they seem to have much more Democratic districts. I mean, like, for some reason, if they're able to survive a primary challenge, which I can't imagine that some ambitious Republican wouldn't take them on, then they don't really have a smooth sailing in their districts in the general. Now, Alan Powell, he's always been a little more independent. Once again, I think Toccoa is an area where he, you know, the home of Ralph Reed, or is he from Hartwell? He's actually from Hartwell. I had to correct myself
he's
there.
Hartwell.
Oh, he represents both?
No, Ralph Reed is Toccoa.
Yeah, Ralph Reed is, but I think I had Alan Powell wrong.
Oh, I'm
but
sorry.
Hartwell, I mean, Hartwell's an area that probably has some, you know, some Democrats left in it, but I think it probably has a lot of the Tea Party, more right-wing demographics, where he could be easily picked off in the primary. But if he does make it through the primary, he probably has a little better shot at maintaining his seat in the House. Would y'all agree or disagree with that assessment?
Well, Georgia, unlike... Go ahead, Catherine.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Georgia, unlike some other states, has been a little bit more friendly to party switchers in recent years, Tea Party notwithstanding. Not only the outgoing governor, but the incoming governor are both party switchers. So I think they're taking a pretty good gamble as far as survivability. What do you think, Catherine?
I think so, too. I think, in fact, I would imagine that they made some kind of deal in that regard. But,
oh, yeah.
You know,
Ben
I mean,
Parker Griffith?
But that's in another state.
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, while the Republican Party can, you know, say, look, we won't get anybody and back them, some renegade that, you know, can say, hey, I'm more right-wing than the Republican Party, which seems to be more pretty fashionable these days, can show up and, you know, try to do this, you know, and try to say, look, I'm going to run to the right of these guys, and then he can probably use some Democratic votes. Now, the one
thing to remember is that if you've got a representative that switched parties, it may be that, you know, he sees the handwriting on the wall and thinks that his district is also more conservative and more likely to elect a Republican in the future. Or they feel very confident in their leadership, and they're well-known, and, you know, if they've been there for a while, they figure, well, it doesn't really matter whether I run as a Republican or a Democrat because everybody knows me and they're going to reelect me because they know I serve them well. And it may be, it may be a question of, well, their explanation may be exactly what Tim said, is that, well, I felt it was necessary for me to change to the Republican Party because the agriculture commissioner and these other statewide offices are now held by Republicans, and in order to serve you well, I felt it was necessary. I mean,
that'll be what they say. It's just the people buy it in that party. I guess there's two more folks that are possibilities to switch. Amy Carter, not the former president's daughter, from Valdosta, and Ellis Black from Valdosta. Now, these folks, they've kind of not decided to switch, and I have a feeling if they're taking so long and thinking about it, I have a feeling they stay.
If they switch after they voted for in the leadership elections, I think that's pretty crappy.
Does anybody know how they voted, out of curiosity?
I don't know.
Neither one of them were there either. I could be wrong.
Oh, really?
But there were like eight Democrats that did not show up. So
okay, well that makes it a little bit different.
Yeah. So, although then if they're complaining about who they got elected, you know, the old adage, if you don't vote, don't complain, and that's really bad given that your vote would have really counted big time in such a small pool of voters, if you will. So,
except I think there was only one of those races, one of those seats that was contested in the leadership election.
Yeah, there was only one. It was the top one, but still, I mean, that's a pretty important one, if you will. So, you know, that's something to watch. And then, of course, I think they're trying, you know, Republicans on, you know, the blogosphere like Peach Pundit, they're kind of wanting to look at any white Democrat that's outside of metro Atlanta and see them as a possibility. I know, Tim, they mentioned Barbara Reese, your state representative, and then I think she should wear this as a badge of honor. One of them said, yeah, she's a lost cause. She's too big of a Democrat. I think, gosh, that could just be her campaign slogan for me, you know. The Republicans called me a lost cause. I'm too Democratic. That ought to get her like a Legislator of the Year award somewhere in my book. But, I mean, you can tell. I mean, it was basically like they were doing a laundry list of who's white and a Democrat outside of 285. And that's just a sad state of affairs. Catherine, agree or disagree on that?
Well, I think it's sad that they are talking about the Democrats at all. So.
Well, I mean,
just shut up and talk about your stupid Republicans. Don't talk about it.
Yeah, but I mean, I just thought, well, they're talking about adding to their ranks, if you will. So that was the thing there, if you will. Well, I feel at this point in the show, I either need to maybe have us all say a pledge or have Tim's outrage.
Well,
you think we should go with the latter?
I'll say the latter.
Yeah, we hadn't had an outrage of the week in a while, so Tim, what's on your mind?
Well, David, we have now had Republican rule in this state for several years. They control every level of government. The agenda is theirs and theirs alone. Everything passed in the state legislature is an initiative that they approve. So what have they delivered so far? Well, we lead the U.S. in the number of failed banks. Hey, we're number one, everybody. But we're only number six in home foreclosures. Now, don't be sad about that, though, folks. I'm sure our state government will work to get us to number one in that category as well. We have no reliable long-term plan for dealing with a water shortage, unless, of course, you fall into the school of thought that things will be fine if it only rains more or something. Other states have light rail service, but we beat that in Georgia. We have hearings on light rail service and gridlock on the roads. Now, beat that, other states. Our unemployment rate is one of the highest in the country, and we're running record deficits here. That's two more areas where our state government is working us toward that number one slot. So with all of that stuff facing us, it's time for some big changes, big progress, big ideas, right? Well, I just heard this week that the first big change is already upon us. The state Senate has decreed that all business should be done only after they do the Pledge of Allegiance to the state flag of Georgia. All right, there's change we can sink our teeth into. Now, this latest bit of brilliance was the brainchild of someone that I am quite familiar with, a fellow by the name of Jeff Mullis. And I am a bit ashamed to say that he's also my state senator. Now, during hearings on attracting movie production business to Georgia earlier this year, Senator Mullis, jokingly, because he represents Mountain Counties, told the chairman of the committee, and I quote, "The cast members of Deliverance are not kin to me." Well, I think he can now stand corrected. As soon as I heard that Mullis had come up with this flag nonsense, I opened the window up here on this mountain, and I distinctly thought I heard something like dueling banjos playing off in the distance. So what is going on here? Mullis gives this tripe, you know, about patriotism and the like as his reasons for doing this. But I'd just love to ask him some questions. One, would he be doing this if a Republican was in the White House? Two, would he be doing this if two teabaggers had not run against him this very year? Three, would he be doing this if he was not thinking of running for Congress, which he is? Four, what if it was still the Barnes flag that they all hated? Would he pledge allegiance to that one? If a lie detector was attached to this man, he would have to answer no to every one of those questions. So there we are, folks. Big ideas from the Republicans who run this state. What's next? A resolution declaring our right of secession? Nah, we already have that one. Hey, how about massive cuts to education to balance the budget? Nah, they already did that too and it didn't work. Hey, but we can tighten up those voting laws to stop all the fraud. And if there wasn't any fraud to start with, why, that's beside the point now, isn't it? Okay, I guess I added a little bit of humor to this outrage. I guess I think it's better sometimes to laugh in order to keep from crying. But the serious facts are that we have some major problems in this state. Many of these problems have been with us for a very long time. And the Republicans like Mullis who run this state have really done nothing about these problems. Jeff Mullis is representative of the cynical bunch in power right now. I guarantee you all, he knew exactly what he was doing when he proposed this bit of nonsense. He knew it would be talked about. He knew his name would come up. He knew that the group of voters he's trying to reach would remember this. Jeff Mullis is a politician. He does nothing by chance. Every move, every action of this man is done for one reason only, to promote Jeff Mullis. Because Jeff Mullis has wearied of the state Senate and desires to move up. So we still are left with all these problems and a state government who does nothing about them. But at least we can all go to sleep tonight, safe in the knowledge that this do-nothing bunch will pledge allegiance to the state flag, your tax dollars at work, and David, your outrage of the week.
Yes, Tim, and actually got me looking. I was trying to figure out, would this be saying the pledge of allegiance that we know of to the flag, meaning the American pledge, and just look at the state flag of Georgia, or is there a state pledge
there,
to our flag?
There,
and I found it out there was.
There is actually one to the state flag. They're going to do that one right after they have the Protestant minister do whatever he does every day. So, you know.
Well, Catherine, did you know that there was a state pledge for the Georgia flag?
I did not know that. No, I did
okay,
not know
let me
that.
Ask you let me ask you the question. Do either one of y'all know the state pledge of allegiance?
No.
I do not.
I pledge allegiance to the Georgia flag and to the principles for which it stands, wisdom, justice, and moderation. Only if these Republicans could give us even one of the three, because I don't even
that
know. I sure
funny.
Know wisdom yeah. on the plate and moderation in neither. And I'm sure that justice is probably as limited as the other two. So, I, you know, if they could actually abide by their pledge, I might be all for it. You know what, Tim? Just
that
say, you know,
really
we had that
funny.
You see Jeff Mullis.
Don't you just
tell
get
me
out
what
of
it
this
is?
Stuff, though.
Justice, moderation, and what's the third one?
Wisdom,
justice, and moderation. It's the state.
Oh, my God.
That
is,
you know.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, this thing has a long history. This thing is probably about 3 months older than my 10-year-old son. It was written in August 1999. I guess it's 11 years old now. So, you know, it's one of those deep storied traditions of, you know, the final days of the last century. It's that old. So Joe McMillan, some guy, probably is the one that created this website. Well, Tim, thanks for bringing us that nonsense from your
state senator. It sounds like he's another lost cause that represents you, except he's the bad kind, in my opinion, unlike your state representative, who's the good kind. But right.
Right
now we're going to go a little further west over the state line to Alabama, and it looks like we both have both Mooncat Sherry from Lefton, Alabama, and Martin Weinberg. Welcome to you both.
Thank
hey,
you.
Hey, Tim, David, and Catherine. How are y'all doing?
Doing good.
Good.
Yeah,
great.
What we're going to do is we're going to each of us have taken some topic areas about Alabama politics, and we'll ask one of you, then the other, kind of getting a panel discussion here about what went on in Alabama. And I'll go ahead and lead off with the governor's race, since obviously that's kind of what drives everything, if you will, in state politics in the off years. Sherry, what happened to the governor's race, in your opinion?
I think it was not a great campaign. We didn't have a candidate that you know, motivated people. Sparks became seen as having one issue, and that was gambling. And I know there were some in the Democratic Party that thought that was going to be a big winning issue that was going to move a lot of voters, and it just didn't do it. It didn't happen. It was horrible.
Yeah, probably other years that might have been a better issue than a year where it was jobs on
yeah,
the national picture.
He was not seen as having, you know, people kept asking about Plan B, and he would say, well, I'm the only candidate with a Plan A, which was true. Honestly, the winner, Dr. Bentley, he really didn't have a plan, but Sparks was not able to capitalize on that, because everybody would think back to what happened to Don Siegelman, who ran on the lottery, was elected, was not able to get his lottery enacted, and then the next 3 years his governorship just kind of languished. He didn't have a Plan B. And so Sparks kind of got tagged with that negative there. What are you going to do if you can't get it through the legislature? And then there were all those bingo indictments you know, a month before the election, which pretty well tanked any potential for actually getting his gambling legislation enacted.
Yes. Well, Martin, what's your take on the governor's race?
I think Sherry's pretty spot on. You know, I mean, I think Sparks proved to be a pretty pathetic candidate. You know, and I don't know so much that he was really the choice of the Democrats. I think, you know, there was so much backlash against Archer Davis that he just kind of was the last man standing there. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, just limping into that that general, I mean, even though he had a large lead in that primary, nobody was really excited about him. They were excited because they didn't want Davis getting the nomination, but they didn't really care if Sparks won or not. And then you had the AEA, which is the most powerful. We don't know what will happen now, but, you know, they were pretty much backing, the Alabama Education Association was backing Bentley, in the runoff on the Republican side. And then, we don't know what happened. I don't know if they gave money in the general or just kind of stayed out of it. But, that was a factor too. Bentley had some, campaign issues, but, they weren't severe enough to really derail him. So, I mean, anybody could have beaten Sparks, I think. I mean, you know, at that point. So, and Sherry's right about the bingo indictments. That certainly didn't help. I think a lot of what it did was dry up a lot of Sparks' money last month, more so than it really hurt him in the eyes of public perception. And I don't think it hurt as much as some estimated it would. I mean, I think that the campaign really didn't get to that because Sparks doesn't have the money to compete, and just the general national trend and the southern trend of Republicans took form. So that's, in my estimation, what happened there.
I think Martin's correct about AEA. AEA picked both the Republican and the Democratic nominees in the primaries, and I don't think they really played much in the gubernatorial and the general election. They were happy with either one. And the lack of AEA money really hurt Sparks.
Yes, and for folks that don't know, the Alabama Education Association is Andre the Giant over there compared to in Georgia, Page and GAE or Tiny Tim. You know, they're a huge political player, at least in the past they were. Well, before we move on to other questions, I do have bad news for y'all, because I'm sure the Republicans are looking at going to be their new state slogan. Under Republican rule, we won the national championship 2 years in a row at two different state institutions and took the Heisman Trophy 2 years in a row at two different institutions with two different players. So if they do that, I don't know that y'all could really have a real plan to come back for a few years.
When I heard y'all talking about the Pledge of Allegiance in Georgia, I laughed because I said there's no Alabama Pledge of Allegiance. The Alabama fans just, you know, Roll Tide, I pledge allegiance to Nick Saban. Now the Auburn fans, I pledge allegiance to Cam Newton. So, you know, that, and y'all probably are hearing it too, but, you know, football is the talk right now, and that's certainly an election year. You know, even then, I mean, the elections kind of take second fiddle to the football in the state, so.
Amen.
Well, that's what a sane Democrat does anywhere around here. I'd much rather the Falcons put much more of a smile on my face than political results do these days as a Democrat. But let's get back to politics, because that's my other show. And we're going to pass this thing around. I'm going to let Catherine Smith ask about some different topic areas, and Tim Shiflett's going to ask. And I'm going to come back with one more at the end or two. Catherine, what are some things you have to ask about?
Well, first let's talk, what do you think happened in the U.S. Senate race in Alabama, Sherry?
That's a complicated one. We didn't have a strong candidate, okay, and we never have a strong candidate against Shelby. And that is the way the state party likes it. I have been hearing that for a couple of election cycles now. They don't want to run anybody against Shelby. They don't want to disturb Shelby enough to make him spend any money. I've been told, oh, we don't want Shelby to open his war chest. So they discourage anybody that might be thinking of running. I mean, I've heard that the fellow that ran, Bill Barnes, was, you know, he sat down with some of the big mule types, and they said, no, you don't want to run. Don't run. Do not run against this guy. You know, if you want to do something, go out and raise money for Ron Sparks. Don't run against Richard Shelby. So he was discouraged from running. He worked hard. You know, he didn't raise a lot of money, but he campaigned hard. He went everywhere. He was on the road a lot. He talked to people. He did what you can do to leverage some grassroots support and word of mouth. I think for a candidate who spent, I don't know, maybe $5,000, I think he did pretty good. But he got no encouragement. Yeah, $5,000 in a U.S. Senate race. And you know, he had the guy at the top of the ticket, Ron Sparks, saying, I don't want Richard Shelby to get beat. That I thought that just sucked.
Yeah,
that's not the way to...
Martin, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, it was a non-starter from day one, like Sherry Express. I mean, I just, you know, the party does, you know, in their own ways, discourage anybody from running against our federal incumbents. And, I mean, I think that holds in the House, too, in some of these seats. I mean, I don't know if anybody's willing to go that far to say that, but, I mean, other than the second and the fifth, which I'm sure we'll get to later, but, you know, I mean, these other districts, I mean, I don't even think we fielded anybody in the fourth congressional district. So, and, you know, in the third, and that's another story too. But, yeah, I mean, she's right on that. I mean, you know, they're not going to give any funds. In the national, you know, and I think part of the reason, too, is, I mean, the national, the DSCC is not going to come in. I mean, I know they've had that issue in Georgia with some senatorial races, that they're not going to come in and really spend any money either. So, you know, I mean, I guess there's some reluctance in that part.
Well, that takes me very naturally into my next question. What is the state of the Democratic Party in Alabama? Did they help in any way on any of these races? Are they organized, or what's the scoop?
It's not a robust organization. They did do a lot of work for legislative candidates. Their focus is mostly the legislature, some judicial races, some local races by county offices. But the big deal for the state party was the legislature, that was a huge bloodbath. But let me go back and say I totally agree with Martin about the federal races. Yes, they discourage people from running against congressional incumbents, too. We saw it with Joe Bonner in the 2008 cycle. There was a guy that really wanted to run. They discouraged him. There was somebody else in the 4th District that discouraged him. And I think the state party is facing a lot of unrest from the troops. The people that I've been talking to, the meetings I've gone to, there are people who say we've just got to start over, clear them out, clean house.
Do you think that can happen?
It's going to be tough because the committee, they changed this is so cute. Back in August, they changed the committee bylaws for the state committee. They would normally hold new elections for officers in January after the election. In August, they amended the bylaws to hold elections in office and then immediately reelected themselves for 4-year terms.
In the middle of the election cycle.
Well, yeah, they saw the handwriting on the wall just like everybody else. This way they, anybody that wants to stay pretty much can unless the majority of the committee grows enough backbone to kick them out.
Wow.
And the chairman is probably going to step down. He says he's ready to move on. But you really need a whole new leadership.
Yeah, you need
so Turnham or Jim Spearman?
Turnham is the chairman.
Turnham. What about Jim Spearman, out of curiosity?
He's the executive director. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about him. I would guess that he would step down too, but I don't know.
Okay. Well,
go ahead, David.
Go ahead, Kevin. Yeah, well, let's pass it over to Tim for his question. I just happen to know Jim and I think Joe both, so I just wanted to ask about him. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. Sherry, I'm going to ask you something first, and it'll lead into my next question, which will be for Martin. Now, what I want to ask you about, Sherry, is these legislative races. You lost 17 seats in the state house and 8 seats in the state senate. Now, that seems like an awfully huge switch for one cycle. What happened?
It's huge. It was unexpected. I mean, I didn't know it would be that bad. I knew it would be bad. I didn't know it would be that bad. What happened is a combination of things. We know it was bad everywhere for Democrats. But it was worse, I think, in Alabama because the Democrats had had control of the legislature for so long, 136 years. And it had become about maintaining their own power rather than getting anything done. The last 4 years had been just almost incompetence. Nothing happened in the legislature. And what happened is people just got fed up with it. They were just like, we're going to throw these bums out. They looked corrupt. They looked incompetent. They looked like they were not doing the people's business. And the good ones, and there were a lot of good ones, they got thrown out along with the bad. I think that the long and the short of it is people were just ready to give somebody else a chance because these guys had done such a bad job. The leadership, I think, did a bad job.
Goodness. Now, that leads me into my question for Martin. Obviously, redistricting is going to be quite the different animal next year in Alabama than it's been in the past. You have 35 state senate districts over there. You have 105 house districts. Do you expect a lot of Democrats to get gerrymandered out of their seats, Martin?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the Republicans have already indicated one of the leaders. I think Wagner, if I'm not mistaken, Jabbo Wagner, one of the state Senate leaders, who may be the majority leader, if I'm not mistaken, you know, indicated that they were going to look at that. So, yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, I think they're going to do it at the state level, and then they're going to make sure that they, you know, kind of hold that 6-1. I mean, we're not going to lose or gain any congressional seats, but I think they're going to do it so that we're looking at probably a 6-1, you know, unless some demographics change in those districts unexpectedly, they butcher redistricting, which happens. I mean, it happened, you know, some in Texas before, but I mean, they may hold a 6-1 congressional lead for the next decade. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that if they, you know, give the Democrats some more strength in the 7th, which is now Congresswoman-elect Terry Sewell's district, and, you know, kind of take some from, you know, give her some of the 2nd and the 3rd, maybe. I mean, I don't know how they would do it and if it'd be approved, but, yeah, I mean, I don't see that we're at the point we're going to field any strong candidates in these congressional races, but yeah, they'll certainly, you know, as long as they're on the same page, I mean, I don't see how they wouldn't. You know, and Sherry's right about the legislative races. I think the writing was on the wall because, the Republicans started organizing for this 4 years ago. I mean, they were making their moves. They were saving their money. They were targeting the districts. So, I mean, I think, you know, I don't think anybody expected it to be as bad as it was. And, you know, some of that was because of the statewide stuff with the indictments. And then a lot was with the national. But, you know, and I heard y'all talking a lot about this, about Georgia. Unfortunately, I mean, there are not, you know, outside of the urban areas, there's not a lot of statewide. I think we've got one Chief Justice, Sue Bell Cobb, but everybody else statewide is Republican now. All the office holders are Republican. You know, a judge is not a very political office. So, I mean, essentially, we don't have any Democrats in any of the state offices. And, you know, now with the legislative going in the control of the Republicans, they pretty much got their wish. So, you know, we'll see what they do. But, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I think they will be, certainly. I mean, they've already indicated looking at redistricting.
Yeah, and a final follow-up on that. You know, the 2nd district down there, and this is for either one of y'all that wants to jump in, was really a 50-50 proposition. Do you think now that one will fall by the wayside and will be redrawn as a, you know, a pretty much safe Republican district then?
I'll jump back in. Yeah, I do. And I think that they'll, you know, originally the 7th congressional district, it does not include any of Montgomery or Macon or Bullock County, which are actually the two. Macon and Bullock are the two, I think, highest Democratic districts in the state. You know, I think Macon County, which is in the 3rd congressional district, you know, that may go back into the 7th, or I don't know how they'll do it, but I think, you know, they definitely will find a way to strengthen it for the Republicans. But that's an interesting one because I think if you look at it really tactically, Bobby Bright's probably the only one that could have even won that one at any point, just with his name recognition and, you know, the Republicans just fielding weak candidates last time. You know, and I don't know. I don't think we can get that back anytime soon, unfortunately. And I think they will find a way to reshape it so it'll be a, you know, 60 or 70% Republican district.
Yeah, and I think Bright is the only one that could get it back if anybody could. And it's, I don't know that he would even try.
Okay. David?
Yes, wanted to talk some more about congressional elections, and Tim was talking about the 2nd, but one that intrigues me is the 5th. It had been held for many, many years by Bud Kramer, and then, of course, it had the party switcher, Parker Griffin, and he got taken out in the primary. But then it still seemed like it was a competitive district, as competitive as a Southern open seat could be in this cycle. And a lot of that, I think, just goes back to the fact that Huntsville is the center of the district. And I've seen some recent research that shows one way to make folks more Democratic, if demographically they're not inclined to be Democratic, is if they have a science background. Like, scientists are much more likely to be Democrats than Republicans. And, of course, Huntsville is probably one of the most scientific communities in all of the South, if not all the nation. That being said, what do y'all think the chances are of that 5th District moving back into Democratic hands in a better year? What do you think, Martin?
Well, I mean, we have challenged I like Steve Raby, but we have challenged Cannon in terms of, I mean, he's a lobbyist and consultant. And, you know, there were some ties with one of his PACs. You know, I think his nephew's running to that whole bingo thing, and I mean, that definitely got mentioned. And I went up there. I mean, Sherry probably knows more about the what actually happened, but if I'm not mistaken, he lost about as bad as we did in the third, where, you know, and Raby spent a lot of money. If I'm not mistaken, I mean, he probably raised close to $1 million. In the third congressional district, the candidate just jumped in at the last minute when Josh Siegel opted out, and I think they got about the same vote total. So, you know, I think that's going to be another one. You know, unfortunately, you know, the demographics in that district is not as large an African American district as the third or the second. So, you know, outside of Huntsville. So I think, you know, that'll present some challenges is the Republican Party, unfortunately, is just, you know, white Democrats are switching to Republican. So, you know, Sherry's probably going to answer that better, but I don't see any real hope for that one. I mean, I know that everybody was kind of, their name was floated around when Kramer retired, and Griffith switched sides. So, I think, you know, anybody that had a chance ran. I mean, there may be some names that you may know, but I think it's going to be tough for a while.
I wish Susan Parker had run. I just begged her to run twice in 2008 and this year. Griffith hurt us, the party switcher business. He made Democrats look like they didn't stand for anything. And then Steve Raby, like Martin said, was a somewhat challenged candidate. He had the lobbyist background, the hired gun background. You know, he's a campaign consultant in addition to a lobbyist. He ran people's campaigns. He was mixed up in the whole pack-to-pack money transfer. The Republicans capitalized on that really well. He never got a narrative going that he was trying to push about how being a lobbyist is really an ideal background for a district that depends on federal money as much as this district does. And Steve didn't appeal to, he's a nice guy, he's a real good guy, and I think he's an honest guy, but he did not appeal to the people in Madison County that you were talking about, the people with the scientific backgrounds, the more educated liberal types. He ran a very white southern rural campaign. He was going after those rural Democrats who turned out to be rural Republicans this year. As far as getting it back, it's going to be tough to find anybody. You know, the best hope is that Mo Brooks, who's going to be our congressman, is extremely open and honest in his views, and his views may not actually line up with the people who elected him. That's going to be the best hope, is that he turns out to be bad.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, since we've talked about such bad news, either one of you, give us a bright spot. Tell us something good or something to hope for in Alabama politics.
Sherry, you go first on this one.
Gosh, I was hoping you'd jump in with something. I think we've got a clean slate here, okay? You were talking about redistricting. I mean, they can't gerrymander too many legislators out because there just aren't that many Democrats left. So that's good. And we got rid of some people that were really a drag on the party. Some of the folks in particularly the Senate leadership, I'm thinking of my own former Senator Lowell Barron, who killed a lot of good bills, good Democratic bills, repealing the grocery tax, ethics reforms, good government kind of stuff. We got rid of some folks who made us look like we didn't stand for anything. So there's hope for the future there.
Okay,
yeah,
Mark,
I
you had a chance to think.
Yeah, I think Sherry's right. I mean, with a clean slate, you know, it can't get any worse. It wasn't like we just barely held on in the legislature. Now we get to rebuild, and I think we're better off rebuilding now than waiting another 2 years. So it'll give us an opportunity to do that. And then, you know, there was a state legislative race in Montgomery. It was a guy named Joe Hubbard who ran against a Democrat, young guy, ran against a Republican. You know, he ran hard. And, I mean, it's not a very Democratic seat, but he won. And I don't know if it's just the mentality. I don't know what, you know, was the mentality, but he ran hard. And I think that we have an opportunity to kind of show some folks if we model that in some of these other seats that we can do that. So, you know, in the legislative races, that's one I saw. And, you know, so I think there's some hope, but we're going to have to make some changes.
Yeah, Hubbard is a real bright spot. And Greg Varner, who ran for state Senate and lost by like 500 votes, he's another bright spot. Both of those guys ran the kind of campaigns that Democrats need to start running now. They were positive. They stood for something. They knew what they stood for. They did a good job.
Yes. Well, we thank both of y'all for coming on, and anytime we need some Alabama information, we can turn to either of y'all and the good work y'all do over in Alabama.
Thank you so much. This is always fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, anytime.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, well, I guess we're kind of in the closing minutes, and we've talked a good bit about Georgia. And I heard a story this past week related to Mississippi, but it seemed very applicable to a lot of races that we might have lost in a close measure. Gene Taylor lost a very close race in Mississippi in a district that is the kind of district that I didn't realize how Republican it really was, even though, because he, you know, usually wouldn't even have an opponent. Well, because he's been so many cycles without an opponent, he didn't even realize what was going on this time. And he had, you know, probably a war chest of hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even over a million. And he actually just hired one staffer, and all that staffer was to do was pretty much answer phones, send out some yard signs, and send out bumper stickers as needed. And that's like all of the campaign that Gene Taylor ran as far as like on-the-ground staffers. Now, maybe he had a media consultant that cut a commercial that they threw on a little bit. But he did no work, and pretty much I was told by somebody that this district is lost after this type of anemic effort. I mean, I know the old gunslinger Brett Favre, when he donated to Gene Taylor, I'm sure he figured Gene Taylor would do a little more with his money than he did. But this is kind of a district that's lost. Have y'all, Catherine or Tim, seen other districts just like this one where, you know, the guy didn't put up a fight? Catherine, have you heard of these?
You mean at the state legislative level?
Or the congressional level, just anywhere we lost that in a seat that's a tough seat for us to hold, and once we lose it, we won't get it back. And this Taylor seat seems like a prime example. But this is not like Jim Marshall where, yes, he did put up a fight. This is where, you know, a candidate didn't put up a fight. I mean, this is very different than Travis Childers, for instance. Have you heard any of these stories?
I haven't looked closely enough at anything to come up with one.
I tell you something, David. We almost had the same situation in Sanford Bishop's district. He woke up, but he almost woke up too late. That thing sneaked up on him. He didn't know he was in a race until he had almost lost it down there.
Yeah, well, I went to bed that night, he had lost.
Yeah, I think some polling did him a favor. They did some polls, and that kind of got him awoken. Mainly, if somebody did a poll on Gene Taylor's race, he might have understood too. But I just heard that story, and I was like, and then I didn't realize. I mean, I was like, okay, which one's more winnable than back?
the Childers seat or the Taylor seat. And, you know, because we had just won that one recently, had been Republican, and they said, oh, well, the northern seat, the one Childers had is more winnable than the southern seat. You know, and I was like, wow. And,
why? More African-Americans?
Well, just the general trend, you know, so it's kind of one of those things that this is a seat where some of these seats, you know, I mean, the Macon Congressional District, I don't know what they'll do there, but there's a chance we could win that back. I mean, you could go through to some other districts around some of the North Carolina seats, Bob Etheridge seat. We could win that thing back. But this Gene Taylor seat, I mean, it's gone for a while, and I just thought, and it was one where apparently he didn't have to go because Gene Taylor is was always pretty popular, and he didn't lose by a ton. So I just thought it was an interesting story that I heard, and it was just kind of indicative of, you know, kind of our problems in the South, if you will. But I think it's been a great show, and I want to thank our folks from Alabama, Sherry and Martin, for coming on. And thanking y'all. And Tim, thank you for bringing the outrage back. And we'll be back prior to Thanksgiving on Sunday night for the Kudzu Vine.
Thanks,
good
night, guys.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force?